This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning again. Welcome as we come your way from Arizona this morning, where a desert moon is shining and the temperature is 88 degrees at 3 o'clock Arizona time. If you don't travel to Arizona a great deal, you're not aware that this state does not go on daylight saving time, so this time of the year, it's Los Angeles time, really, here in Arizona. But we do have a lot to talk about this morning. We're going to check in with Jim Fazell and, of course, Gary Pack of the Twin Garden Farms in Harvard, Illinois, will be joining us on the phone. And Max Armstrong is making a special appearance today, and when he joins us to talk markets at about 5:45 this morning, he'll tell you all about that. Going to, guess what, an old tractor show and an old truck show. I think Max spends almost every weekend during the summer at one of those events. But we have Jim Fazell standing by, and we're going to check with him when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's Jim Fazell time here on the Saturday Morning Show, and halfway through July, Jim, I'm guessing we're going to see more locally grown products at farmers markets?
Definitely that. In fact, it's time. Really, there's a lot of stuff on the farmers markets, and they've been a little bit earlier than I thought they would be, but we'll be there this morning, actually. We'll be over at the farmers market visiting with some of the folks to see how things are going. And as we go to the farmers market every week, we try to visit with the growers and find out what kind of situation they're in, whether they've had rain or whether they've had insect or disease problems. And so far this year, it seems like even throughout Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, the season, this part of Illinois anyway, the season has been pretty good. They've had mostly enough rainfall, and even though it's gotten a little bit dry at some times, very shortly the rain comes in and they'll get maybe an inch, maybe, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we got one rainstorm 2 or 3 weeks ago where we got 2 inches in one storm. A lot of rain, and interestingly enough, it didn't run off, it soaked in, so
right.
It was time. Anyway, it's been a pretty good season, and one of the things you need to do is to get out to the farmers markets and take advantage of the stuff, or if you've got your stuff coming in your own garden right now, fine. Get out and pick it when it's ready.
And it's time to start the second half of the garden season, is it?
It is. You know, it's a shame to think that the season is dwindling, but it moves. It doesn't wait for us. So particularly for those of us who had trouble getting in the spring. And, you know, some of us had problems because of wet weather, and some things that were planted never did grow because it was quite cool early, as you can remember. Or some spots have been vacated, and that's the situation we're in. We have places where things have already been taken up. You don't want to let those go to waste. So there are things that you can plant now that do extra well in cool weather. If we can get them started at this time of year, as they begin to mature and the crop begins to come in, we have mild temperatures, and a lot of things are even better at that time of year than they are when we have the hot part of summer, when they are harvested in the hot part of summer. Things like beans or carrots, beets particularly, and if you are inclined to grow turnips, they're much better when they're cold. These can be seeded out in the garden in areas that have been vacated. There are some things that could be started indoors right now that can go in spots that'll be vacated a little bit later. We always try to start broccoli about this time of year, usually about the 15th of July. We start thinking about the fall crops. Broccoli and any of the other cold crops like cabbage or cauliflower, things like lettuce can be started indoors too, particularly leaf lettuce and spinach. If you like spinach, this is a good time to get it started indoors where you can control the situation, then put it out when temperatures have begun to moderate a little bit, because if you put it out when it's hot, the spinach is going to bolt right away. So clean out those vacated areas of those areas where nothing grew. Remove the old plants from the garden and put them in a compost pile or bury them. Turn the soil over and prepare a seed bed just like you did in the spring. You may, if you have areas that the soil is a little bit dry right now, you might want to water the soil before you work it. Usually we try to do that a day ahead of time. And then if you're going to grow some of the things like beans or some of the root crops, those can be affected by maggots at this time of year. So you want to protect them probably using either Promethean soil insecticide before you seed or floating row covers over the rows to keep the flies that lay the eggs out of your garden. Then after you get the things seeded that you're going to put in, because we have such intense sun right now and the warm weather, what we like to do is to cover those rows with a board. Now, that means that you're going to keep that soil cool and moist, but you need, and then the seed's going to germinate very quickly because of the temperatures, so you need to watch every day in the morning and the evening, and as soon as you begin to see seedlings, take the boards off, because if you leave them on there, you're going to have white seedlings that are going to fall over and get sunburned as soon as you uncover them. So as soon as they begin to come up, open them up to the weather and let them fend for themselves. Now, because we have hot weather at this time of year, one of the things you need to be aware of is that you're going to need to water if we don't get timely rains. Water early in the day on a rising temperature so that, first of all, you have reduced evaporation. In fact, a lot of communities won't let you use outdoor watering in the middle of the day because they realize that the evaporation is highest at that time. But also, if you water early in the day, the plant tops are going to dry off before dark, so you're not going to have any disease problems. I like to apply a measured inch of water, and I have several little rain gauges that I put out. One says Orion Samuelson Max Armstrong,
it's years ago that we gave those away, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I still have them, and they still work. You know, they don't wear out.
Good.
So anyway, and then we talked about harvesting. Harvest in the cool of the morning as soon as the dew dries off and the produce is still cool, so you won't have to cool it. And one of the things you need to watch out for as you're going through your garden, and I like to walk the rows in the evening to see what's happening. Before the mosquitoes come out, but after the heat of the day, look for the things like squash vine borers, cabbage worms, the little white ones that are flying around. Slugs have not been a problem this year because of the intermittent dry periods. And the foliar diseases, they were bad earlier, but at present they're not too bad. So keep an eye on what's going on, and if you see something wrong, fix it. Apply whatever means you need to get it under control. Now, before we run out of time here, I want to mention something about the lawn. We talked about the insect control, the long-term grub control. There's still time to put that on, but you need to hurry because it takes 30 days or so for that stuff to be active. And the adult grubs are laying the eggs right now, and these beetles fly around looking for good soil, soft, moist, green grass, and if that's what you have, you can be sure that they're going to try to find that in which to lay their eggs. So you need to use those materials now. Sod webworms, the adults are flying 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's time to put something down for them. You know, the Bonide Delta 8 insect control, or 7, will work very nicely, and that will keep these things from eating the grass, which they'll eat even if the grass is dry. So anyway, there's a few things. Summer's well on its way, as we mentioned before, and you don't want to waste a moment or it's going to be gone and over before you know it.
All right. Getting the snow blower out will happen before you know it. You're absolutely right.
I hate to think of that.
Yeah, I do too. Thank you, as always, for your weekly visit. Jim Fazell, he's our specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show.
It's 17 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio Chicago. And talked last night with Joyce Watson, who founded the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Foundation back in the, 70s or 80s when that really got underway, and some activity this next week or two. Well, we have the current class graduating and a new class holding its first session shortly. 30 men and women have been selected to be fellows in the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Foundation class of 2018. It'll be the 18th two-year class in the organization's 34-year history. Interesting mix as well. The class represents a diverse mix of agricultural expertise, a unique characteristic of the IALF program. There are 21 members who work hands-on at a farm each year. along with representatives of multinational agricultural companies such as Bayer Crop Science, Monsanto, Syngenta, CME Group, and ADM. Also represented in the new class, employees of the Climate Corporation, the Mashoffs, Helena Chemical, Osborne Bar, and Prairie Farms Dairy. And the class includes two county Farm Bureau managers, assistant managers, and employees of First Farm Credit Services and Farm Credit Illinois. Don Norton, president and CEO of the IALF, said this class is geographically diverse. They have members from 23 different counties in Illinois. And there are 11 women in the class as well. I think when we had the first class, and I served on the board of directors from the very beginning, and still they like to call me an emeritus member of the board of directors, but I can remember in the first class, I don't think there were any ladies involved. But beginning next month, the class of 2018 will experience 14 seminars over 19 months to build the skills, the knowledge, and the character to be global leaders in agriculture. And in August of this year, the IALF will have graduated more than 490 leaders since its founding in 1982. Quite a record, too. Graduates include two 10-year presidents of the Illinois Farm Bureau, one of three members of the Farm Credit Administration Board in Washington, D.C., the first woman to be Illinois Director of Agriculture, the incoming presidents of the American Soybean Association and the National Pork Producers Council. All in all, a very successful program, one that we, I think, can all be proud of, building leadership. The current class, they'll graduate Thursday, August 4th at special activities here in Chicago. Oh, what about sweet corn? Well, I heard from Tom Hallett at Tom's Market up in Algonquin. That's the one that we visit most of the time. And he's telling me that their sweet corn is ready and they're serving it and selling it. So we now have locally grown sweet corn at farmers markets here in the Chicagoland area. And we're going to find out about Me Rice sweet corn right after this here on the Saturday Morning Show. Another sure sign of summer is the arrival of Me Rice sweet corn at farmers' markets and stores around our area. To find out how the crop is doing, we go by phone to Harvard, Illinois, to Twin Garden Farms, and Gary Pack, our friend of many, many years. And I guess, Gary, my first question is, when will we find Me Rice corn this year?
That's the most asked question in the world right now. We're getting the phones are ringing off the hook, and it's a good thing. But then startups and shutdowns are really, really interesting. We're looking to start hopefully next Friday. It's not a slam dunk yet because, as you well know, we need to pick Me Rice when it's ready, not when we're ready. And so we're looking at the countdown right now on the website at 6 days and 21 hours. That could change a little bit. So the most important thing is to check the website through the week or give us a call.
And that website is?
TwinGardenFarms.com.
All right. So let's briefly go through the growing season so far this year. You planted your first Me Rice when, and how is it doing?
It was about April 24th when we put our first Me Rice in, and as usual, and you know, it's like that each year. It's cold and wet. Normally, in the nice warm spring, it comes out in 6 or 7 days. Our first planting didn't come up for 3 weeks. And so the start is going to be a little thin, so we really don't know volume, and the quality will be fine for what we have, but we just don't have the normal stands. But once we get past the first 7 or 8 days, we will be in full production and we'll be fine. So it's just a normal spring when you try to push that envelope a little bit that early.
Do you plant the next crop to fulfill the summer demand?
It's about every 6 or 7 days, depending on, you know, we wait for a spike. We don't normally wait for days. When we get that just that hint of a spike from the previous planting, we'll get out there and plant again. And as you know, it doesn't always work that way, but that's what we try to do. That's the benchmark.
And, of course, Mirai corn, one of the questions I often get is, why is it sweeter? But you worked on this variety with crossbreeding for years, did you not, till you came up with it?
Yes. It's natural breeding, and it is just a combination of all three sweet corn genes that was really tough for the breeder and had never been accomplished before, and it's been a struggle for them ever since, even for, you know, for other seed breeders and things like that for sweet corn. But it's got all three attributes of sweet corn in the same ear.
And while we started pretty much around Harvard, how broad a geographic area are they now planting at Mirai?
The Mirai seed is available throughout the country and even internationally. So the it's, you know, down south with naturally you get the bugs, and Mirai has a little bit of a thinner husk on it than the other conventional sweet corns, and so it burns when it gets too hot in the south. So it's not the appearance isn't as pretty as the customer would like it. The corn is fine, but the appearance isn't quite there. But it's a small grower product because it is a little bit harder to grow, and it's pretty important when you pick it, when you determine that it's mature and you want to give it to the customer. It's a little bit of a technique, and you need experience.
And I recall a visit to Twin Garden Farm several years ago when there was a delegation of Japanese people there, because this is a very popular corn in Japan.
Yes, it's very popular, and the Japanese like taste and good food. They pay a lot more of their household income goes to food rather than, you know, other than the United States normal. So it was a natural, and they have a lot smaller fields and sort of really watch closely their crops. So it was a natural to start there. And it's very popular there. They actually made a different category other than sweet corn for Mirai. It's its own class in Japan.
And then another question I'm often asked by city consumers: when you start harvesting, how early in the day do you start, and is it done manually or is it done mechanically?
Mirai is picked by hand and always has been because of the tenderness. And we don't know of a machine that can pick Mirai without damaging either the top or the bottom. So we start at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then we bring it in and we put it under a cold shower and get it cool. One of the most asked questions I have, just what you asked, is was this picked this morning? And I always say no. Because we do it, we pick it today, we cool it, and we give it to you tomorrow, and we guarantee it for 7 to 10 days. So there is no problem. It's just the concept of, oh, you know, go out, get the pot boiling, and go get the corn, and hurry up and put it in the pot. Mirai will last for a week to 10 days, and I've got many stories of much longer in the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah, we have kept it much longer than that, and
sure.
It has still been very, very good. Now, you've expanded over the past few years. You're going into farmers markets all across the Chicagoland area, or where?
Yes, and there's about 45 farmers markets, and basically we have our core markets that we've been going to, but a lot of that is predicated on who we can get and the vehicles and which days the markets are on. So there's about 45 farmers markets, and I will definitely miss some if I try naming them off.
Right, no.
They are on the website. The website's been made so you can look right away, get location, times, link to their websites. It indicates whether we have Mirai or vegetables or both at that market, and if it's open or it isn't. So the website's the key for getting information.
Final quick question. I like my Mirai wrapped in tin foil with butter on it on the grill. What's your favorite way to eat Mirai?
I put about an inch of water in a pan, and I just steam it for about 2 minutes, and that's my favorite way. And I don't use butter, and I just lick For the salt to stick, I just lick across the cob and put a little salt on it and go that way. And I'm lucky. I get it every night. And but you know what? If you stand with our customers, you're going to hear a myriad of ways to cook it, and that's what's fun, and it's a lot of fun.
It is. Well, it's always fun to visit with you, Gary. And so next week, if the creek don't rise and all that sort of thing, we'll look for me rye at Farmers Markets.
That sounds good, and if we don't have it, I'm running away.
Okay. Gary Pack, Twin, and again, it's twingardenfarms.com.
Perfect.
And that's the website where you get all the information. Gary, thank you for joining us this morning.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Orion.
More to come here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Do you know a superstar kid doing great things? Nominate them for the Steve Cochran Kid of the Week, and they'll qualify for a $5,000 cash prize, courtesy of Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevrolet in Antioch. Details at WGNradio.com/contests.
It's a great time of the year. We enjoy talking about, well, all sorts of things that come off the farms of America for us to enjoy. So we're going to find out what's going on with Max Armstrong. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own WGN and WGNradio.com. And we're 27 minutes away from that next newscast here on WGN Radio in Chicago, and still looking probably for some rain in various parts of the Midwest, but no question that we are dealing with a weather market, as we have seen the ups and downs, particularly in corn and soybeans this past week, much of it based on what happened with weather. But Max will be talking to Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor in just a few minutes, and they'll sort of toss the weather situation around and some of the reports that are due to come up. Well, the next big one now will be August 12th, and that'll be the August crop report, when we get projections of production based on what's happening rather than on history. Right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson this morning, suggesting you better follow the rules in a moment. If you're tired of your clothing being ruined by a spill or a stain, now there is hope thanks to Wink Wash Away Laundry Stain Remover. This easy and safe to use pre-wash stain remover is a must-have in the laundry room for all washable, color-fast fabrics, including wool, cotton, synthetics, even cashmere. And for those unexpected stains when you're on the go, watch them vanish with Wink Instant Spot Remover. Check them out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Well, it's county fair time. It's state fair time again. One of my favorite times of the year. And I would guess it's a favorite time of the year for members of 4-H clubs and FFA chapters all across the country. It really is their Super Bowl time of the year, the time that they are able to go to the county fair, the state fair, livestock shows to show what they have learned and accomplished in the past year in producing a better quality animal, a better quality crop, or whatever project they have chosen. Now, I haven't talked about this for maybe 2 or 3 years, and probably that's a good thing, because apparently it's not happening nearly as much. But unfortunately, it does happen. People break the rules, particularly in the livestock judging ring. You remember the incidents during the past decade or two when Grand Champion hogs and steers were disqualified at state fairs after they had been selected. Disqualified because the exhibitor had not followed the rules on the use of drugs or other enhancements to make the animal look better in the eyes of the judge. And it's an embarrassment and a disappointment for the exhibitor when that animal makes it all the way to the top as a grand champion and then is disqualified. It happened last year at a couple of state fairs, so it hasn't completely gone away. So I'd like to extend this Samuelson sermon to parents and those who are leaders of 4-H clubs and advisors of FFA chapters, and those people who help young people get their animals ready to take into the show ring. First of all, there are different rules at every fair, county, or state. So make certain you know the rules and make sure you follow the rules. In professional sports, Coach Vince Lombardi a long time ago said, "Winning is everything." And that certainly may be the case in professional sports. But when it comes to 4-H and FFA, winning is not everything. Learning is everything. Learning how to produce better animals, better crops, better products. Learning how to follow the rules, to practice sportsmanship, to congratulate the winner and just decide you're going to work harder when you go back into the ring next year. Yes, as I've pointed out many times from my own experience, years ago in an FFA chapter, when I came in fourth out of five in the Wisconsin State FFA Public Speaking Contest, I learned a lot more from losing that contest than I would have from winning. So keep that in mind. Enjoy the season. Enjoy the experience. Go and compete at the best you can and try harder next year. That's what 4-H and FFA is all about. So follow the rules. Bring credit to the FFA and 4-H clubs across the country. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. Coming up, Max Armstrong talks markets. Well, before he talks markets, he's going to talk about what he is going to be doing today. And so good morning to Max Armstrong.
Well, good morning, Orion. I just wanted to mention that later today I'll be at Waterman, Illinois. I just wanted to pass that along first of all this morning because the Waterman Lions Club will have their annual summer fest today just south of the downtown area in Waterman. They've got a tractor pull this morning. They'll have the tractor and truck parade of power at noon today. I'll be master of ceremonies, co-master of ceremonies with DeKalb County Farm Bureau President Mark Tuttle. And I think they'll have a bunch of old trucks out there again today with the old tractors. The National Truck Historical Society, the Northwest Illinois chapter, usually has a great display there. It was the markets we talked about this week as we visited with Dale Durkholz from AgriVisor when he came by the studio. Dale, I've often laughed about it. This is the time of the year that we really closely monitor sex in the cornfields. But truly, we are in the midst of pollination. Some have finished up. But how would you say pollination is going? How much of the crop is in the midst of pollination now? And what is your assessment of how well that is taking place?
You know, as a whole, pollination really is doing well so far at this point. In fact, over the weekend, I walked out behind my house and went, smells like corn, doesn't it? You know, you could smell it going on. I got a cornfield right behind my house. Conditions so far actually have been pretty good because temperatures haven't been real stressful. Moisture's been abundant. It's what's ahead that are going to cause some people some concern, and it could impact pollination to a degree, but it depends on how long it stays hot.
What do you mean, what's ahead? What is the assessment of the trading community on what that weather looks like now?
The Dome of Doom. That's what it's popularly called. You know, it's let's say a week and a half, 2 weeks out, the last part of July, everybody's been talking about, you know, we're going to get hot and we're going to get dry, especially in the western Corn Belt and on into the Great Plains. That's significant, too, because as you look over the last number of years, the heart of the Corn Belt has moved west, and I'd say it's west of the Mississippi River, as we're speaking. So how hot it gets out there, and some of that planting was a little later, we could actually impact some pollination, you know. But the ultimate impact on corn, the question today is, how long does it continue?
We have probably a somewhat significant amount of the corn crop that is already pollinated, right? I mean, some of it is finishing up pollination.
Yeah, I'd say we're probably, in terms of pollination, somewhere half beyond. You know, it really kind of varies to what part of the Midwest that you're in at this point. But I think probably half has already gotten through pollination or the bulk of it.
When will the entire crop be out of the woods? Now, I know, you know, you need good weather toward the tail end of the corn crop to finish off the yield. But basically, when will we be able to say this corn crop is made?
November.
When it's in the bin.
You got it. One of my thoughts this year, and it fits in with the weather, we go back to 2010. 2010, we had people looking at the crop condition ratings, and through that whole season, we had people go, you know, it's a good-looking crop, it's a good-looking crop, you know, and when it gets tall, you can't tell. But when farmers went to the field that year, they went out and got into the field and went, you know, it's not as good out in the middle of the field as it is on the edge. And if we're going to have some pollination issues, that's my fear, in that we mask what is really going on with the plant. So like what happened in 2010, we discovered through the series of USDA reports that really started in September that crop yield kept going down somewhat. Wasn't a bad crop, but the yield kept faltering, and it disappointed people.
And sometimes we see that happening. You talked about out in the center of the field because of the heat that builds out there, right? When we get into a hot period of time for that corn crop, quite often the heat is more intense out toward the center.
That is true. You know, the one thing that's going to tend to mitigate that a little bit at this point, though, is we do have good moisture out there at this point. And after the rains we've had here the last few days and what we'll have here the rest of the week, a lot of people are going to have good soil moisture out there. So you get that nighttime radiation cooling, which may keep it from staying real hot at night. That's the biggest problem you have with the corn.
Looking at some of the fields in central Illinois, in an area that you know very well, a few days ago, boy, it looked like a greenhouse. I mean, and I described it as I was driving down U.S. 136 in Champaign County, Illinois, as looking at a carpet. The crop was so even, the stand so superb, the fields so clean. It looks like a bin buster out there.
Ditto. You know, that's all you can say about it. You know, it is good. I've been up to Chicago about two, three times in the last few weeks. I've been to Indianapolis, and, you know, I've been out western Illinois a little bit, and you have to really get on into the far western parts of Illinois where there's been some water stress on the crop that you can see, and I'm talking lack of water. You know, it's been a little dry. And there's some places in the southeastern part of the state where you run into that as well, you know, but these are just pockets. And every year where you have a really good crop, you have places that are really, really, really good, and then you have places that are, yeah, they're a little bit below average. So I don't think we've got anything terribly unusual out there yet. But again, I say yet because to me it's we're going to warm up here at the end of the month. How long does that stick with us? And so far, weather forecasters haven't delved beyond that two-week slot.
The condition ratings on corn and beans not only have not dropped, but in the most recent report, they actually improved ever so slightly. What's your gut feeling about this coming Monday's crop condition rating? Will we see it staying just about steady? Is that your feeling?
I don't see any reason for it to change after the weather we've had this last week. You know, it's still going to stay good. The thing that a lot of people need to understand about those condition ratings, so that's an eyeball look at the crop. They are so subjective. But
the trade lives by those. I mean, they really, you know, become so pivotal on Monday afternoons.
They do live by those, and that bothers me an awful lot because I don't think a lot of people in the trade, especially those that really control big dollars, really understand how subjective those numbers are. There is very little scientific behind them. And I can show you when you look back at data, you know, that we have a lot of misses in the gaps in there according to what yield that those condition ratings imply and what actual yield ends up being.
Well, then let's look ahead toward the report that will be based on actual field surveys. When the August 12th report comes out from USDA, we should have a remarkably good handle on crop size, shouldn't we? I mean, especially compared to a year ago when there was so much late planting and so much that did not get planted.
It's a good benchmark to start from. The thing we have to understand about the August crop report, it's population count. And it's plant population. And this year, because of where we are in the stage of development, we'll have good ear population counts, or at least reasonably good ear population counts to work with. They take that and they apply some kind of an estimate, usually a five-year average of ear weights back against those population numbers to come up to yield. But if, in fact, we're seeing possibly a little bit of pollination problem, if we stay warm and we shrink our period between pollination and black layer, you know, our kernels can end up a little bit shallow. In other words, you tend to be a little bit of a drag on ear weight. So that's something you really never know until you get into September and maybe even October.
Well, we've talked about the production side so much. Let's zero in a little bit on the demand. Soybean demand is still very robust, and it looks like it's going to hold up.
I don't see any reason not to think of, well, and even corn demand is going to hold up because we're going to find a good export program all the way in, probably into the early part of winter because of what happened down in Brazil. Soybeans, you have their crop that came back basically to last year's level. And so with that, we're going to find their export program start to wind down a little bit sooner. In fact, it already has, which means ours is going to stay robust. But offsetting this, we had a story this last week out of China. They were looking maybe at September imports 2.5 million ton. I mean, that's a real steep drop from where we are today at about 8 million ton per month. But that period there is not unusual to be low because that also is a transition in their imports coming out of South America to gearing up coming out of the U.S. So I don't know how to gauge that, but I think there's some little edge in here that's world demand may be softening just by a small fraction.
But do I follow you to say that we could probably go well into the winter without seeing the grain market just totally fall out of bed simply because of the shortfall of the 2016 South American production?
Oh, I think you're right on the mark on that. You know, I think we're in a big, broad, sideways pattern at this point in time. Unless weather comes into the mix, getting new highs in beans going to be really tough. But on the flip side of that, you know, when we get into, let's say, harvest and we find beans flowing into the pipeline, you know, we could get down to, let's say, $10, but you don't see anything really significantly below that. So we're just going to be trading in a big, wide swinging range there. And the corn market probably doesn't have a downside risk to a great degree either. We're down at low levels. Yeah, we aren't going to find a big move to the upside unless weather does have an extended stressful period, but you really can't be wildly bearish either. Demand base is good for both.
Now tell me, can you get excited at all about wheat with a record per acre yield? Something like, what, 10 states had highest wheat yields ever? When did you ever see soft red wheat and hard red wheat both as good as we've seen in this year's production?
You know, that's a rarity. That really is. And, yeah, we're saddled with wheat not only here, but we're saddled with wheat around the world. Looks like we're going to have a good Russian crop, looks like we're going to have a good Ukrainian crop, a good Ukrainian corn crop too. European crop, EU crop's going to be off a little bit in here, and quality's going to be down this year. The big thing with wheat you got to keep an eye on is what we end up doing with wheat feed demand. That has to perk up. And you'll notice on the last S&D, they increased, I think, the world feeding number of wheat by somewhere around 8 million ton. We added 100 million bushel here into the U.S., and I think we can actually see those numbers both go up a little bit. So I think we finally found something near bottom as far as wheat's concerned. But wheat needs corn to carry it.
My, even the cotton market got lit up by the USDA.
Yeah, it did. I don't pay as much attention to cotton because I don't have a lot of cotton farmers in Illinois and Iowa. But, yeah, it really did. You know, I think there's reason, you know, when you look at cotton, you can see the production numbers after we had the big acreage number there, that things are finally starting to gel, demand's starting to find a base. But the big thing when you look across the sector of commodities, I think it's still money wants to own ag commodities at low prices. And I think that's one thing people are going to have to start to gear into and think about. We've had a lot of money flow into it since the first of the year. And right now, when you look across the spectrum of investment mediums, ag commodities and to a degree, commodities in general, to me, are still attractive because they're low price relative to other things.
But the stock indices have been hitting some records.
Yeah, they've been hitting records. But people, when you look at the stock market right now, we're up at new record highs. They're also questioning how long can this game last? You know, and so you have to be doubtful here. And, you know, do you want to keep all your portfolio into the equities? And I think what's happening, people are diversifying out. And if you look at ratios between stock equities and commodity indices, you're seeing some signs here that commodities look like they're starting to gain ground versus equities.
And you get into the month of August, sometimes the stock market, those dog days of summer gets to be slipping away just a little bit.
That's like walking out my back door in August, right? Yeah.
Back to cotton. There's one word that will inject a little bit of sobriety into that discussion about higher cotton prices, as we saw in the wake of the USDA report the other day. Polyester.
Yeah, it will, you know, and with energy prices down where they are, you know, polyester prices, and I don't follow that market at all, but polyester prices are going to do nothing but stay cheap. And so with poly encroaching on that, yeah, it does create some demand issues in the long haul for cotton. But as I'm quick to tell people, I tell you what, folks, I love an all cotton shirt better than anything else.
But as Dustin Hoffman learned all those years ago, it's plastics. Boys and girls, ask your grandparents about yes. Dustin Hoffman and The Graduate.
Yeah, it's plastics when you look at it, but that's looking at it from an investment, too.
Great to talk to you, sir. Thanks, as always, for coming in. We enjoy it.
Good to see you.
Dale Dirkholz with AgriVisor.
Just a couple of more comments on the market activity this week, because it was a weather market. Beginning the week, we saw corn and soybean prices up sharply because the forecast said there would be an extended period of scorching temperatures. But then on Thursday, the forecast moderated and backed off the period of heat and dryness, and so we saw that selling come in. As a matter of fact, Terry Riley, analyst with Futures International in Chicago, said some traders didn't want to go home with a position this weekend, not knowing what's going to happen. He said people just got out of long positions and decided to call it a day. And here is a rather impressive number. After the market closed yesterday, weekly data from the Commodity Futures Commission showed that non-commercial traders cut their net long positions in corn to 14,216 contracts. That's down nearly 93,000 contracts from the previous week. So we ended the day yesterday with a lower market as the August soybean contract ended the day down 12.5 cents. November soybeans down 6.25. September corn ended the day down 5.5 cents yesterday, and December corn down 6.5, and the September wheat contract down 8.5 cents. Markets indeed can be fickle. Back with a quick look at state fair schedules when we continue on the Saturday morning show. As I look at the schedule of state fairs for the summer, just about every state in the union has a state fair. As a matter of fact, right now, the California State Fair is on at Sacramento. Started back on July 8th, it'll go through July 24th. And the North Dakota State Fair gets underway the 22nd. But then, coming closer to the Midwest, on July 27, the Ohio State Fair at Columbus, Ohio. On August 4th, the Wisconsin State Fair at West Allis, just west of Milwaukee, will get underway. On August 5th, the Indiana State Fair. August 11, the Iowa State Fair. And that same date, the opening of the Illinois State Fair at Springfield. And I'm looking forward to being there again on the Salute to Agriculture Day on the 16th of August to emcee the Salute to Ag Breakfast and also the Grand Champion Governor's Auction of Livestock that evening. Busy time. Enjoy it. That's our time here on the Saturday Morning Show. And Max and I appreciate your company every week here on 720 WGN Radio, Chicago's very own WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.